going to be speaking on step three, which is make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. So Judy, we're ready to hear what you have to say on that.
Judy, you're muted. Maybe I can unmute you.
Sorry about that.
There you go.
No lip readers in the group, huh? Come on now. I thought you guys over there in Erie were good.
Yeah, we are.
So today, I just want to talk for a minute about the love that I have for Alcoholics Anonymous. If you haven't figured that out by now, there's nothing that brings me more joy, greater purpose, and just an awesome connection with a power greater than myself than being involved in applying the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. There's nothing like it. It is a life that I could not imagine for myself. And I am completely and totally grateful for all of you, because if it hadn't been for you, and I honestly just don't know where I would be. If you're new, and there's probably some people here that are, just keep coming back. Just keep coming back no matter what. And if you're struggling, just for the time that we have together tonight, just kind of do this. Put your shoulders up and then just let them come down and relax. And just sit back in your chair, lean into the chair, and just relax, huh? No one's going to hurt you. Breathe easily and just know you're in a safe place where people truly care about you. I think I want to tell you a little story. A husband and a wife were both in the program, and he was coming up on his, 35 or 36 year anniversary. It was a big deal. And his home group was going to have a cake and a little get together for him after the meeting. And so his wife attended the home group meeting with him. And they were sitting there after the meeting, and he kind of, snuggled up to her, and he said, "Honey, could you ever in your wildest dreams have imagined that we'd be sitting here with me getting ready to celebrate, this anniversary?" And she said, "Darling, you have never been in my wildest dreams." We're not a glum lot. We're not a glum lot. Jerry, did you get that, honey, or did you miss it? Okay, there we go. Just checking to see if you're with us. That's from the grapevine. They have this new book out. It's called, Take Me to Your Sponsor. And it's loaded. Oh, my God. It's hysterical. I laugh at the jokes in there until I think I'm going to die. So if you haven't had a chance to get it, purchase it. Look, there I am. Buy Grapevine Literature. I just wanted to share that with you because, why not? I do love to have fun in Alcoholics Anonymous. If I hadn't realized that I could have fun here, I don't know how long I might have stayed, because when I got here, I really thought, oh my God, all these old people, what the hell am I supposed to do? They're old fiddle faddles, and they talk God and religion and all this. I just don't even belong here. But the longer I stayed and listened to you, the more I realized that I wasn't any different than any of you. We all had a similar, relatable experiences, and there was no getting away from that for me. So I didn't think it then, but I know for sure now that I'm so glad I'm an alcoholic. if I wasn't an alcoholic, I don't know where I ever would have learned how to live and become the person that I am today, because I'm not anything like what I was when I arrived here. So step three, came to believe that, no, made a decision, I know, made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. Holy mackerel, that's kind of like a two-part step, isn't it? We come to believe first, and then we make a decision, and we have to come to believe, right? So we kind of have to have an understanding that this power greater than ourselves, whatever it is for each of us, is going to care for what? For our will and our lives? What the heck is that? It was very confusing for me. And Mary just broke it down real simple. She said, your life is your actions and your will is your thinking. And she said, why would you want to hang on to any of that? Look at your experience, look at your past, and tell me what is good about any of your thinking and the outcomes and any of your actions and those outcomes. And boy, that was hard for me to listen to. And I just, I want to talk about what my attitudes and my thinking was like. I'm telling you, I don't know about you guys, but I was really messed up. I have these written down somewhere here in this little book. First of all, I was exhausted all the time. I wasn't sleeping well. I was suffering with fatigue and burnout. I thought I had to do everything. I thought I had to go everywhere. I was living in chaos. And I'm 3 years sober, and this is what my life looks like. I was full of rationalization. If you would ask me, you know, what's going on, I would say, oh my God, you know, you never believe what he did, what she did, and this is how I'm suffering as a result of it. So I was always trying to explain my behavior with logical reasons, and they made no sense. I was blaming you. I was blaming everybody out here for what was wrong with me. I was impatient. I had no patience whatsoever. And I was quickly irritated when things didn't work out right. And I could be provoked very easy. This isn't like I wasn't a nice person so much to be around. I was argumentative. I guess we could say I was cantankerous. I love that word. That was a new word I learned in sobriety because, you know, I had a crazy sponsor and I had to learn a new word every day from the dictionary and use it in a sentence. I had bouts of depression that I had a hard time pulling myself out of. And it all kind of broke down to self-pity, poor me, a cocky attitude, a lack of discipline, you know, a lot of boredom. I just didn't know how to live. I was nutso. Now, what kind of actions does this kind of person have? Well, not good, I can tell you that. Easily provoked, so, you know, I would react in anger. I would raise my voice. I would, you know, I've been known to throw things. Mary changed that. She told me I had to go to the room and pound a pillow, close the door and pound a pillow till I felt better. And, you know, I had to start doing that. But so that was my life. That was my thoughts, and that was my actions. So she said, why do you want to hang on to all that shit? You know, how about you give that to the care of a power greater than yourself? Well, we had a little trouble there because, as I explained last week, I didn't want to hear about God or church or religion, or I just, you know, leave me alone with that nonsense. And so what was working for me up until that time was to know that a group of drunks, G-O-D, group of drunks, you guys in the meeting kind of became my higher power. I listened to you, I saw what you were doing, and you gave me a glimmer of hope that maybe if you did, maybe I could. Probably not in a million years anyway, because I'm a big screw up, but maybe. And then that changed to G-O-D, good orderly direction. So I would come and I had to write down one thing. I learned at every meeting and share it with my sponsor. And I went to two meetings a day for the first year and a half. And I loved you guys so much that for the next 12 years, I went to a meeting every day. Yeah, unless one of the kids were sick or I was sick. And that's how I don't know. I loved meetings. I loved hanging out with you. I felt safe. I always had at least an hour of peace and tranquility while I was at the meeting. Nobody hit me. Nobody threw me downstairs. Nobody punched me in the head. None of those bad things happened to me when I was with you folks. You didn't tell me anything that was harmful to me. You did get kind of... what do we want to say? You kind of pulled your tough love language and actions on me, and it was needed. It was needed, and I thank God for the old-timers. I thank God for my sponsor. I just don't know where I would be without all of you. So when I looked at it from that point of view, I thought, I wonder what would happen if I tried it. So here's what Mary said. She said, here's what I want you to do, Jude. She said, "I, when you're going through your day and you become aware that something is amiss, okay, you become impatient and you want to just, you know, all of a sudden that cocky attitude, that impatient attitude is rearing its ugly head in your mind, and you're gonna act like you're irritated or provoked. Instead of doing that, but when you become aware, she said, I want you to take a physical one step backwards. Oh dear God, Mary, what are you doing? You just stand where you are. If you're sitting down, stand up and take one step backwards. Why, Mary? Why? Well, first of all, because I said so, and secondly, because it's going to help you. How is it going to help me, Mary? Because it's going to give you a couple of seconds to think, to engage some kind of intellect rather than reacting out of an emotional state. And all I want you to do is just try that. And if the kids are argumentative and you're getting frustrated with them, I want you to do the same thing. And while you're stepping back, your thought process needs to be, I wonder how God or higher power or group of drunks would want me to act. And she said, great things will come to pass. Oh, really? Yeah, right, Mary. That's going to do it. But I'm here to tell you, this was the craziest thing. As I began to do that, and I had to do it many times throughout the day, just to step back, nobody even paid any attention. It wasn't like a big step. It was just enough time to disconnect from the emotion and come from a place of logic. And it began to change everything. So that instead of being restless, I started to feel peaceful. Instead of being irritated, I started to feel calm. Instead of being selfish, I started to have an interest in others. And it seemed like all of my reactionary modes based on my emotions seemed to dissipate over time. So for me, probably none of you have stepped back and said, I wonder how God would want me to act. But that, I don't know, she was right on with me. That's what I needed to do. And I'm forever grateful, because the way I had been thinking and acting was really erroneous in so many ways. I had to really take all of my emotions and my attitudes based on all of the old stuff that wasn't even true, and they just had to be cast aside. But that isn't something that you just do overnight. It happens over time. And, you know, thank God there's no timeline when you have to have anything done or when you have to do anything here in Alcoholics Anonymous, huh? Thank God, at least in my case. And so that's what began to happen. Then as I began to sponsor girls, and I had sponsored them prior to having 3 years, oh, God love them, I don't even know. Well, most of them didn't stay sober, and it's no wonder with me at the helm, you know, dear God. But anyway, I did my best. I really thought I was doing what I was supposed to do, but looking back, I just, I cringe. But as I sponsor women, and still to this day, you know, I have this wonderful old table in my kitchen, and the coffee pot's always on, and we sit there, and before I speak, I'm waiting for the inspiration, the guidance, the intuitive thought that comes from what I believe is a power greater than myself. And it's always right on. The girls tell me, how did you know? How did you... I don't know anything. I wait for direction from a power greater than myself. And it always happens. And if it doesn't, then I'm not the one with the answer that day. And I'll tell them that. I'll say, I don't have any idea how to help you with this. I'm not the one who's supposed to help you. There's someone else. So you have to go talk to someone else. And, you know, they like it that I don't have all the answers. So sometimes I'm supposed to help them and sometimes not. That's just how it works for me. So if you're wondering, why should I even consider taking action on these steps? You know, I hope I've given you some kind of idea why it might be beneficial for you, why your home life, your work life, your personal, life, your connection with a power greater than yourself might have the ability to change as you begin to try some of these things that you hear at meetings, and as you take these steps and try to, you know, just work with them every day and try to apply them as best you can. There's a couple other things. On the bottom of page 62 in our wonderful big book, and I love this. It says, this is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. And if you just give me a second, I had some notes on that. Oh, good grief. So if we think about what is a director, you know, when you're reading this book, it's good to have a dictionary and to have some conversation with your sponsor, the people you're reading it with, so that you can have a deeper understanding, so this can become more meaningful for you. And that's what I did with, or that's what Mary did for me. And so the director, what does that mean? A director guides each of us to do their best. I like that. He is the principal, we are the agents. The principal guide gives enough freedom of the agent so that the agent can be successful. If any of you have had a managerial or an owner relationship in the business world, you certainly know that the best thing you can do to those in your employ or under your guidance, the best thing you can do is make sure they have what they need to be successful. So if this is what a higher power can do for me, if I turn my will and my life over to the care of this power, why wouldn't I want that? And then if we think about he is the father, we are the son or the daughter, in my case, the father has unconditional love. Those of you that are a father know that. And the son, all the son has to do is respect and honor the father. So I wanted to add that because, you know, that kind of did it for me. Now, when I took step three, I took it with my sponsor. And you've heard me say that I don't like these pre-written prayers. And I don't especially care for the third step prayer. I don't care for the seventh step prayer. I don't like that 24-hour book. Although all of them have some good things about them. The way that I pray is just from my heart in my own words. And so my third step prayer was not with the third step prayer in the book, but Mary said, just say whatever, you know, from your desire to invite this power greater than yourself into your life and to care for your thoughts and your actions, your will and your life. And so that's what I did. And Mary and I did that in a prayerful mode. And I do that with the girls. I make sure I do a third step with them. And I let them say their own prayer if they desire, or we can do the third step prayer if that's what they want. Usually about half do the third step prayer from the book, and the other half just speak from their heart. And either way, the results are the same. They all seem to have a desire to move forward and continue on in this journey of sobriety. So step three, made a decision. That's kind of like a public oath then, you know, not public in the way with a lot of people, but public with your sponsor. And for those of you that do sponsor, if you're not doing this with your people that you sponsor, boy, you're missing out on a connection, on an acquaintance, on a new relationship that is indescribable. It brings two people closer. It's kind of like, you know, I have a bunch of girls and I call them my soul posse, and they care for my soul. And when they see I'm in trouble, this is so important to me, because I know that they got my back. And I'm the same way with them. I adore them. I can't imagine my life without them. And we have a hoot and a holler, but our 12-step program is evidence of our desire to stay sober. And we don't mess around. We're serious about that. But we live life fully. We love endlessly. We forgive all as much as we're possible. And it just makes for such a wonderful life. So I think that's about all I have on step three. And so we'll entertain some questions, I guess. Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judy. So now we have time for questions and answers, like Judy said. So if you're here in the room, go ahead and raise your hand. We'll get the microphone over to you. If you're on Zoom, go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your question when you're ready. So who would like to start us off?
Judy? Jerome Wilson?
Hi.
How are you? When we used to go up to Gateway, we can't go anymore, it's a state facility, and we go through the first three steps and then they rotate out, we get a new group. And often some guy would say in the room, every time I do the third step, I go out. Have you ever heard anything like that?
I have not.
And what would you cause that? What is it about the third step that would frighten people, confuse them? Go ahead.
Maybe he wasn't ready to give up control. I don't know.
Okay.
It's crazy. I don't know. Maybe it was just an excuse, Jerome.
Excuse to drink.
Yeah.
Yeah, could be. It's happened in a few different groups of people, and I thought it was some kind of a thing that I was somehow missing. But,
What do you think? What do you think?
I did think it might have been an excuse to drink. That was something that crossed my mind. But it seemed to be reoccurring in different groups, total different groups of people, and I just couldn't understand it. Why the third step is such an issue with people. We never did 4, 5, 6. We didn't do anything past that because we didn't have that much time.
Yeah.
You know, rotate out in a month or so. And we would be there once a week, once a month, I mean, and it. But that's what happened with the third step. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Hey, Jerome. Bob here, alcoholic. By the way, hi, Judy.
Hi, Bob.
I remember you from Blood Day. I think a lot of it, Jerome, may be talking about, the third step talks about God. I know it says that we understand him, but people still recoil from that they think it's somehow religious or something, and it's not, but I'm just saying that might be a possibility.
I'm Karen, an alcoholic, and thank you so much for your lead, Judy. I really enjoyed it. And I enjoyed the part about what you said about prayer and not the rote prayers, because actually that's even what the Bible says, that God just wants us to talk to him from the heart, that's really what he does want. But what I liked was that point you said about literally taking a step back. That's struck a chord with me. Do you know where your sponsor got that, or is it just something that she somehow came up with because it's what you needed? Or
yeah, I like to, of course, I like to think I was special in her life. and that she created that little ditty just for me, but I doubt that. And no, I never asked her where she got it from, and she just. She was a clinical psychologist as well, so she had a lot of a lot of tricks,
a lot of tools in her belt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Who else has a question?
I'll ask one. Hey, hi, Judy. Thank you.
Marion,
alcoholic. You know, as you were talking about the whole third step, and I guess, you know, we always go back, or at least I do sometimes, and I think, where was I? And I know that I kind of came in and, like, was a sponge. You know, I wanted so much to be sober, so I went along. I was kind of one of those people that nodded and smiled and don't know that I really believed everything, but I trusted that I would get help and get sober, if that makes sense. And so I think I did the third step that way, not genuinely and not totally, I hate to even admit that, not 100%. I wasn't all in, but I knew that I had to do it. And I wish somebody had maybe stopped me, maybe called me on it. Or do you think it took me a few years to get that aha moment? And I think for me it was the whole I didn't want to get caught up in a religious thing, and I was a little afraid of, oh, my son used to call them Bible thumpers. I was a little afraid of the cult. I don't know, but I think the fear was in the very prayer. Relieve me of the bondage of self, and that I may better do thy will. Because I think it took me a long time to figure out what's in my higher power's will. If that even makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so my question is, and I'm okay with all that, but it just took me several years, and I think I got stuck. If you know what I mean. Yeah. So, do you, when you sponsor people, do you pick up on that? Do you let some of that ride? I mean, knowing that people will catch up or get it in their own time. How would you have dealt with me?
Well, Marion, first of all, let me assure you that I did not do step three 100%. I wasn't all in. I couldn't possibly be. I was just examining. I was looking. I was hoping that you people were not lying to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the attitude I had. And I think most might have, you know, some of those ideas when we begin these steps. I mean, this is brand new to us. This is territory that we have never visited. I mean, give our thoughts and our actions over to, and I'm not even sure, you know, about the faith that I had other than what I saw in others. So no, I think that our dependence on and our belief in a power greater than ourselves happens slowly, at least for me, slowly over time. Now, did I have some very important aha moments? I certainly did. But they weren't the kind of spiritual experience that Bill described in his story. And I don't know that I was looking for that. I was looking for anything that could bring me some semblance of peace and just to stop the craziness that seemed always going on in my head. So, you know, thank goodness Mary didn't say to me, you have to do this 100%. I want an absolute decision from you. You know, thank God, Marion. And in your case, I believe that was probably true as well. And so I'm glad a sponsor didn't say to you, listen, you're doing it wrong. You know, I think, and I believe each of us, if we have a sincere desire to stay sober, we really do the very best we can with what we have to work with. And that's good enough for me. And that's the way I feel about the girls. And in time, this begins to grow and expand, and it just becomes more of a way of life, more of a, you know, a dependence that you grow into, a knowing that everything's going to be all right because there is a power who's caring for me and all of my difficulties and all of my joys, you know. So, you know, thanks for that.
Thanks, Judy.
Yep.
Who else would like to ask a question?
I will, if you have, unless someone in the room is ready to speak.
Nope, go ahead.
Okay, hi, I'm Leslie, alcoholic, and Judy, you disappeared somehow. I'm not sure how that happened. There you're in a small square, not a big square. Anyway, I'm so glad to hear you. I've really enjoyed your first two talks and this one, and I want to go to the taking the third step with another person. And I took my third step with my sponsor. I went to her house. We got on our knees. We held hands. We prayed the prayer out of the book. And I've done that with people I've sponsored. And one of them, you know, wanted to use her own words. She found something that reflected, the ideas. And that was all. I love those experiences. I wouldn't trade them. That's like taking a third step all over again for me. But I guess I wanted to ask you to talk about this aspect. When I was coming up, I didn't get the impression or sense the direction from my sponsor that a third step was anything more than a decision followed by a set of actions, and that my decision when I was going to follow through with the rest of the program. And so it kind of demystified it for me, but I was wondering what your thoughts are on that, if that's something that, I don't know, is that a thought that was helpful to you or something that you've passed along?
Yeah, Leslie, I think, so many things were said. How can we remember all of it, you know? I think the things that are burned into my memory are the things that were the most impactful to me. And I had struggled with thinking, honestly, I really believe that the way that I was, the way that I acted and the way that I thought, I did not believe that was going to be able to be changed. I believed that that was the result of all my experiences in life, and I was going to be stuck with that. That was my understanding, and Mary knew that. And so I think did she say all we needed was a willingness and that it meant we were going to continue with the remaining steps? Of course she mentioned that. But there's a deeper impact with step three as well. And you certainly know this because your attitudes and your thinking has changed since you've been here. And how does that happen when it can't change prior to this, when we can't make the craziness stop, when all the old nonsense comes back in, when we're paralyzed with fear, when we think we can't do it, when we just feel so depressed and despondent that we just don't know how we're going to get out of bed. And we can't, you know, hard as I tried, I couldn't change those things. But as I started to implement her directions on step three, those things became clearer and easier for me to do something different, to realize something else. It says, she used to say, let me see if I can get this right, don't ask God to direct your footsteps if you're not willing to walk. Mm-hmm. So her main belief was this is not a thinking program. You're not going to think your way into it. See, and that's what I was trying to do. You need to act your way into good thinking. So you have to take these, there's some actions you have to take. Or you don't have to take them. You can go to hell in a handbasket if you want. It's your life. I mean, that's how, that's what she, you know, that was my sponsor, crazy. So I appreciate your comment, Leslie. God bless you.
Thank you, Judy. It's great to hear you.
Thank you.
Who else has a question for Judy? Kevin's got a question for Judy.
Thanks again, Judy. I appreciate it. At the beginning, you were talking about, I think you were talking about what Mary said to you about something about thinking and actions and something. I'd have to...
Our thoughts and our actions. That's our will and our life. What is your will in your life? Your will is your thoughts. Your life is your actions, right? I mean, that's all we have. We have our feelings, but, you know, they don't count because they're wrong. Well, when you're new, Jerome is laughing. His probably still don't count because, you know, he's still working on himself real hard, but, you know, teasing you.
Thanks. That was my question because I wrote part of it down and I knew I had it twisted, so I just wanted you to repeat that. For myself and for the tape, so I appreciate it. Thanks very much, Judy.
You guys are the greatest, you know that?
Hi, Bob Alcoholic. June just said, made me remember something from back in Lunde. He said, this isn't an intellectual program, this isn't a thinking program. So one of the times, numerous times, I was at Lunde. I was leaving, the day I was leaving, I'm walking out, and Travis was there. And Travis and I always got along really well. And I told him, Travis, boy, this time I got it, man. I know that book. I know exactly what to do. And he said, well, you might know what to do. He said, but this is a program of action. It's not intellectual. It's not memorizing the big book. It's not, you got to do something with it, you know? So when you said that, that just reminded me of Travis, Read Me the Riot Act, so, which I appreciate. So,
yeah.
Thanks. Good seeing you again.
Thank you, Bob. And you're probably realizing that he was right.
I am, and I haven't had a lot of action, so I got to get back on track. So.
Well, it's really hard with COVID, you know.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm not using that as an excuse, but my wife and I are separated right now, and I'm living in a little apartment. We had the COVID thing for so long, couldn't go anywhere. I'm retired.
Yep.
And then last June, I got a DUI. So they just decided to give me my 60-day suspension at the end of January. So now I don't have a driver's license for another 3-4 weeks. So you add all that together. I mean, it's no excuse. I'm trying to go. This is my third Zoom meeting today. You know,
good. So good, good.
I'm making the best of it. Trying to anyway. So, but it was good seeing you, and thanks to everybody else here.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Sure. Use the phone, buddy. Use the phone. Yep.
Well, Judy, I'd really like to thank you. It was absolutely great hearing you again. You know I love you to pieces.
Alan?
But I have to ask you, these old-time sponsors, they came up with some of the strangest things, and did they have them written down? Or my sponsor, when I would say, I don't know what I'm going to do till it's time to leave for a meeting, I'm going nuts, she'd say, clean your bathroom.
Yeah.
I mean, were these, you know, 45 years ago, 50 years ago, were these common things for sponsors to pass on these very strange things that I've never seen written in any AA literature, but they were.
No, you know, when I, if I would just say to Mary, you know, I'm bored, I don't know what to do, she would say, put your shoes on and go take a walk. Call me when you get back. And she said, smile if you see anyone out there. And, you know, and I felt better. And I called her and I said, wow, you know, it just felt so good to be outside. Now, why couldn't I think of that on my own? Why, you know, I just, honestly, I just was so sick. Yeah, so she told me a lot of crazy shit like that. Oh, sorry, swearing again. Oh. She's not happy about that, but or clean a drawer, yeah, or make a bed or whatever.
My sponsor would also say, if you can't make up your mind whether you want to have peas or corn for dinner, call me.
Yeah.
There were a lot of very strange things being said a lot of years ago. Just
yeah,
agreement.
But that Helen, you're here and I'm here, so they work, Jenny.
Thanks, Judy.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you, Judy. We appreciate hearing you speak tonight.